Hi, I'm Alex. 欢迎收听硅谷幼儿小趣派。
Oh, yeah!
Hello, 大家好，这里是硅谷育儿少数派，我是 Lina。 一些熟悉我的朋友可能都知道，从去年开始呢，在攻读研究生学位的同时，我也重新拾起了自己对画画的兴趣爱好，并且在我们社区的大学里面报了油画课。今天呢，在节目的一开始，我想先跟大家来分享一下我个人重新回归艺术之路的这条心路历程。小时候呢，画画一直是我生活的一部分，对于年幼的我来说，它是表达自我、释放想象力的一种叙事方式。在大多数童年的时光里，我从未停止过画画，参加了学校的绘画俱乐部和各种绘画比赛。在很多个独自待在家里的日子，我可以一个人安静并享受地画一整天。直到高中那一年啊，与大多数那个年代的中国学生一样，我们的人生目标突然转向了专注于高考。于是我暂停了所有的兴趣爱好，一心一意沉浸在备战题库里。但是没有想到，把画画这样一停下来，就停了十几年。成年后的我，在忙碌的工作和生活中，虽然也在我热爱的广告和公关行业里找到了创意与叙事的乐趣，但是再也没有时间重新拿起那支曾经热爱的画笔。直到去年的夏天，我们全家去欧洲旅行，在戛纳我遇到了一群法国朋友。在法国国庆日的晚宴上，三代同堂的法国朋友们跟我们一起举杯庆祝。我意外地发现啊，那位年长的法国奶奶竟然画得一手好油画。她告诉我，从小她就喜欢画画，但有了孩子以后呢，就没有时间再画，直到她的孩子们长大了一些，她才重新拾起画笔。现在啊，她每一天都会抽出时间来画画，但是她画画的态度是没有功利心的，也没有明确的目标的，纯粹就是因为热爱和享受这个画画的过程。对他而言，画画就是生活的一部分，像吃饭和喝水一样。他的生活方式和艺术态度让我重新审视了我自己与画画之间的关系。这也让我回想起了画画给我童年和成年生活带来的很多积极影响。那些画画的时光给我带来的纯粹的快乐，不仅教会了我生活的哲理，还在潜移默化中塑造了我的世界观和美学观。它给我的生活增添了无限色彩，甚至在心灵疗愈上也起到了至关重要的作用。与那位法国奶奶的邂逅，让我决定重新拿起自己喜欢的画笔。我立下了一个新年愿望，无论多忙多累，都要给自己留出时间画画。重新回到画室的那一刻，我的心情既感慨又雀跃，看到那些熟悉的石膏像、画笔、颜料和画室中的那一抹温暖的阳光，我突然感到了一种久违的与生活之美再次邂逅的感动。绘画是一个自我对话和心智训练的长期主义的过程，在那段沉浸其中的日子里，我可以一整天都在画画，忘记吃饭，忘记查看手机和电脑。这也是我有一阵子没有再频繁更新播客的原因。在这个只属于我自己的创作空间和时间里，我感受到了缓慢、宁静但极具深度的工匠精神，以及之前在节目中提到的与幸福感有关的那种心流的体验。我的重新回归也间接影响了我的孩子们，尤其是我女儿。看到妈妈画画的过程，她也想要自己创作，甚至还请我教她一起画油画。于是呢，我在家里添置了一些画画工具，并将客厅的一角重新布置成了一个绘画空间。每当我在钢琴曲的背景音乐里画画时，我会把孩子们的绘画工具也一起摆出来，给他们一张大桌子和一大片白纸，让他们跟我一起自由地创作。跟孩子们一起画画，现在已经变成了我生活中最享受的时光。在这个过程中，我重新审视了美术教育在我成长中所扮演的重要角色，以及现今的主流社会对待美术教育的态度。虽然我的父母也很支持我画画，但是从未有人鼓励我将画画作为一条职业道路，它始终被定义为兴趣爱好，排在那些被视为主课的学科之后。事实上，画画比起任何一门学科，是在我生命中最持久的追求，而且是我自己的选择，我对他的热爱从未改变。 然而在主流价值观的影响下，它总是被我们大家视为次要学科，甚至是可有可无的选择。但回望过去，画画的日子对我人格的塑造和思维的培养以及心灵的滋养，是任何数字或可量化工具都无法衡量的。搬到硅谷生活已经将近9年，我也深刻地感受到在这里对科技至上的崇拜。教育的焦点几乎完全倾向于广受追捧的 STEM 课程，科学、技术、工程和数学成为主流，而艺术和美学教育则往往被边缘化。即便有家长为孩子报名美术兴趣班，许多仍然受到功利导向的影响，将其视为提升竞争力的工具，而忽视了艺术在培养创造性思维、情感表达和个体成长中的深远价值。本期节目我特地邀请到了一位在硅谷的美术老师 Shoshana， 她将与我一起进行一场深度对话，探讨在硅谷的美学教育以及她在孩子成长发展中的深远影响。Shoshana 是我家哥哥和妹妹所在学校的美术老师，她毕业于世界顶尖设计学府帕森斯设计学院，曾经在中国的上海世界外国语小学和宋庆龄小学任教过3年。如今她在硅谷的一所专为高智商儿童设立的私立学校 Gifted School 担任美术教师，同时呢，她的两个孩子也在这所学校就读。 Shoshana 的美术教学理念强调以学生的自主选择为核心，英文叫做 Choice-Based Lessons， 也就是说他的教学内容会根据不同学生自己的学习兴趣和需求来灵活制定，给予学生充分的自主选择空间，让他们自己来决定绘画的主题以及创作材料和媒介的选择，从而完全把作品的创作过程交还给学生，而并非传统模式下的以老师为教学中心，老师统一制定教学练习内容，单向的传授给学生的这样的模式。在本期的对话中，他不仅与我分享了自己关于美学教育的独特见解，同时他也会谈到他早年在中国的教学经历，对硅谷美术教育现状的看法，以及在目前的这所高智商儿童学校里的教学体验。我和 Shoshana 的对话是全英文的，这也是我们的节目第一次引入英文的内容。为了保持内容的纯正性，我没有加入中文翻译的配音，而是把英文原版的对话呈现给大家。如果你需要参照中文翻译来更好地理解这期访谈，也可以在我们的简报平台上找到全篇的中文翻译内容。我们的简报平台是 www.educationminority.com， 当然你也可以在我们本期节目的简介里找到相关的链接。最后要友情提醒大家，本期的采访内容的结尾部分有彩蛋哦，所以一定要听到最后。好了，下面就让我们一起来听本期节目的采访内容。Hi, Shoshana. Thank you for being here today. I'm so happy to have you.
Hi. Thank you for having me here.
I actually have been wanting to talk about this topic for such a long time because personally, I'm an art lover and I do love art. Since I was a kid, I have such a huge passion about drawing, painting. So today, I'm so happy that you can actually join me to talk a little bit about art education and specifically in Silicon Valley here, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, can you tell me a little bit about yourself as an art educator and also about your art?
Sure. So I think like you, I've always had a passion for it. I think as far back as I remember, drawing was the thing I kind of moved towards. And from the time I was probably 8 or 10, I carried a sketchbook everywhere I would go. I would go around drawing everyone I saw. And I think portraits were really the thing I was most drawn to. A lot of it is I was a really shy kid. Mm-hmm. And art's such a wonderful way to express yourself without having to speak up in front of a group.
I get it.
That was a big draw for me. But when I got a bit older, I ended up deciding that I wanted to study art and I wanted that to be my area. So I went to Parsons School of Design. And while I was there, they had an education program. So I kind of stumbled into doing a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Really, for me, I think the draw was I enjoyed working with kids from the time I was young. I always babysat. I always worked with kids. And I kind of stumbled into it, I guess.
So you have two kids, correct?
I do.
You are a mom as well. So as a mom and art educator, so I'm just curious. So how does that art immersion or art nurturing look like at home?
That's actually a funny one. So I'll be really honest. My own children are much more drawn to like math and science and are not terribly excited by the arts. You know, sometimes I almost think kids react to you and they want to do something different.
Yeah,
but they have a lot more of their interests go towards the math and science.
Yeah, but I have been to your house and I was amazed by how you used the cardboard to make the huge drawing thing in the kids' room. You know, it's just like how you create the space for your children with art.
Those were made by me and my kids together. And then we do occasionally do family projects. I get really excited about decorating. So I do a lot of that around the house. And I will bring the kids into it sometimes and get them involved in those things.
Yeah, that's very cool. Tell me a little bit about your study, you know, in the art school, because you mentioned you've been to Parsons School.
So there's, I went to Parsons in New York and I did a semester abroad in Paris at their campus there.
Yeah. So how was that experience like in Paris? Because everybody would be like, oh my gosh, Paris, you know, the paradise for art, right?
You know, I mean, I think the beauty of it, so it was an American program in Paris. So in many ways, it didn't feel that terribly different from the New York experience of Parsons. But the thing that's really different is that when you're in Europe, you're just sort of immersed in a world where there's so much art history, where you go to the museums and you, even walking down the streets, the architecture is like a museum.
Yes.
So I think it's an immersive experience being in Europe and seeing the art history there was something that helped me kind of grow as an artist and an art educator.
How did you first approach art as a child? Do you remember that moment?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that I did, so is really I would just bring sketchbooks everywhere and I was really interested in portraits. And I can remember having art classes as a kid. And most of them followed what I didn't know it was called this at the time. They follow a curriculum called discipline-based art education.
Oh, okay.
And it's very teacher-centered, where they're having the goal of teaching you very specific skills. And most of the decisions and the concepts come from the educator. So I kind of grew up with that model of education, but when it comes to how I actually learned art, most of it really stemmed from outside of school, just spending a lot of time drawing without that structure.
I see.
I mean, the part where I developed the skill, and I think where many people who are artists do it, is that they just spend a lot of time doing the area of art they're passionate about.
Yes.
Which I think kind of led me towards the model that I follow now, which is giving students that open studio time to create the thing they're passionate about.
That's very interesting. What age were you when you started art class? Do you remember?
So I grew up in Pennsylvania, which very different from California, where since they passed a proposition back in like the 70s that they passed that really cut the funding to schools in California a lot. And art is pretty much always the first thing on chopping block. So very few people growing up in California in the past 30 years grew up having art. But I grew up in Pennsylvania, where most schools had an art educator. So I always had art classes from the time I started school. And I think I even had it in preschool.
So do you remember how did your parents support you for your pursuit in art?
Yeah, I think they always would look at what I made and thought it was exciting and were encouraging of it. When I decided I wanted to go to college for art, they, you know, were a little bit nervous about the career prospects, but they were still, even with that, supportive. I think one of my biggest memories was when I was in high school, I wanted to just paint my walls and they were like, okay, go ahead. Okay. And they let me paint my whole room.
So that just kind of reminds me of my own childhood, because I loved drawing so much since I was like maybe 2 years old. And I would have drawn like on anywhere, like the wall or like books or the photo albums, just like anywhere that has a blank page that I just want to draw on it, you know? Yes, my parents would, they were being very supportive and I went to like art class, but that had been going on until I entered high school.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in China back in the days, when you entered in high school, all your focus will shift to the test for college, which is called Gaokao. And I think from then on, I just kind of stopped like practicing art or drawing, because all my time was just spent on academic learning and the test preparation.
Yeah.
I do remember my art teacher actually casually mentioned to me saying, I think you could consider applying to art school. But for some reason, I don't remember anybody in my friends or family circle would encourage me, be like, hey, I think you would do great in art school and I think you should go ahead, just pursue that dream. Also, I kind of got the impression that, you know, we need to be more practical about your future choice, right? It's like, oh, you know, being an artist, are you going to really be able to succeed, right? So now that I think back, and I would sometimes wonder, what if I actually went on that path that I chose art major for my college? So yeah, you mentioned something about the California education system. They cut down the budget for those programs, which sounds like very devastating to me. I think I wrote a blog like many years ago, just talking about my observation that in Silicon Valley in general, I feel like parents or just all the school programs are heavily focusing on maybe science, math, robotics, coding, right? It's just like very technology driven, which makes sense because we're in the center of technology in the world, right? But I just feel like there are not that much, I mean, to me, not enough art programs providing to children. So can you share a little bit about your perspective, like how you see your observation, the art education environment here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when I moved to Silicon Valley coming from the East Coast, and I first looked at like art teaching jobs, I was actually really shocked that they just barely existed because they just don't support that. So it was from the time they passed Prop 13 in the 70s, they cut all of the funding towards art. And they're just, so high school, there was a requirement that they have art education. But basically from K to 8, it was like a bunch of band-aid programs of volunteers, maybe. And if they didn't have good volunteers, there just wouldn't be anything.
I see.
And so it was kind of a shock to my system when I saw how poorly it's done in Silicon Valley compared to where I'm from. So like where I came from, most schools have an art educator. I got certified to become an art teacher. And then I came out here and like there's no one who, like very few people have my background are actually certified art teachers out here because there's just like so little demand for it. That said, I think it's actually gotten way better because it was like 2 years ago that they passed Prop 28. So now they're actually, for the first time, requiring art education for K to 12, which is really exciting. It was essentially some celebrities endorsed it and they passed a ballot measure and now it's actually a requirement. But even with that requirement, it hasn't made that shift to everybody having art to the degree
that's true.
I'd hope to see.
I was wondering why, because, you know, the demand and how people understand the importance of art, I think maybe there's a little bit lack of awareness of how art influences children in their development, right? So as an art educator, will you just elaborate a little bit about that, like why art is so important?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so integral to just human development. Every culture, every society historically has always used arts as a means of expressing their ideas, as a means of expressing their religion, as a means of expressing their worldviews. It's integral to every culture and every society and just comes naturally. Kids always draw before they start to write.
Exactly.
You know, it just comes along with the territory that's what we do as humans.
Do you see how art actually benefit or impact on children's development mentally, physically? How can we let parents or the society know, like, hey, you know, we actually really need art to nurture kids from early years through all the childhood?
Yeah, I mean, I think it absolutely does. It's a thing that kids, you know, crave. see, and I hear kids tell me that's the reason they want to go to school. Mm-hmm. In our typical public school, there's a lot of kids who really dread and don't want to go because they think math is boring, because they think literacy is boring. Mm-hmm. But art is the area that they're excited, and it gives them a reason they're motivated to be in the educational system in the first place.
Yeah.
It's an area that people connect to more. The mm-hmm. arts, just it, that chance to express ourselves, to share our ideas, is mm-hmm. it's just a big draw.
I think I only started realizing the importance of art in my very late 30s or mm-hmm. early 40s, like now. Yeah. Uh-huh. So back in the days when I was just working so hard in the corporate world, and, you mm-hmm. know, I see art, but I never really use art as a self-soothing or, you know, therapeutic yeah. way to just calm myself down. Mm-hmm. I think now in this age that I have children and I have a lot of things to deal with in my life. And from last semester, I started doing oil painting, and I paint at home, and I just start realizing, oh my gosh, this is such a process that can actually make my soul feel real peaceful and calm me down.
Yeah.
And I feel nurtured, and I feel my body and my mental health, you know, has been improved so much. As I know, nowadays people also use art to do therapy, right? Like they use art to, you know, help people to feel better.
Yeah.
Which in general, I feel the education or the society doesn't really provide enough for people to have some time for art.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think the US, especially Silicon Valley, has a culture that's very, very focused on working and producing.
That's true.
And I mean, when I look at the startup kind of cutthroat culture, we don't necessarily give our downtime to do the things that we value in life. And so it's the things that make us happy and the small things in life. And I think all of us, even those who are in no way an artist, are affected by and impacted by the art that we see around us, by our environments.
Yeah, absolutely. I have this inspiration that I wanted to go back to art. It's because last summer I traveled with my family to Europe, and I met some friends in France. We were having dinner in Cannes. So I met this French family. You know, they have this French grandma who looks like just like a very typical grandma. Uh-huh. You know, she likes cooking and all that. But then I discovered she's actually a very good painter. Mm-hmm. She does oil painting, and she showed me her artwork. And I was so amazed by that. She loves painting since she was a kid. Uh-huh. Of course, you know, when she just had her children and she didn't have time for that. But then when the children grew up a little bit and she started going back to painting every day. Yeah. And she's like, you know, this is just part of my life because I just enjoy doing it. Uh-huh. It's not for I wanted to own an art degree or get a job in here or sell my art or make money. It's, she doesn't have any purpose to get out of this. Uh-huh. It's just a pure enjoyment. And and that just inspired me a lot because I feel like nowadays a lot of us are so purpose driven.
Mm.
Like you feel like, oh, if I invest my time in doing art, what am I going to get by the end of the day, right?
Mm.
But maybe you just forget about like just purely enjoying that moment gives you a lot of benefit. You don't even realize that, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate art educators so much, especially in Silicon Valley, because I don't really see that many.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if you would be able to share a little bit about just in general, the art educators in Silicon Valley, are their situations are good for them to make a living here? I really want to advocate for them.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I will say, I think just educators in general as a whole, in many ways, the public school system in particular is really in many ways in a crisis where teachers are really burnt out, teachers are really struggling in many ways, people are leaving the education system. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to art itself here, which first of all, in many places for K to 8 just barely existed up until now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of space made in the system for art education.
I see.
I think it's changing, hopefully, with them having passed Prop 28.
Uh-huh.
But even with that, like, the couple people I talk to that are in public school system, I've moved kind of to a private school now, but the couple people I talk to in the public school system, they still have sort of a band-aid program. They have like a program, it's called a CSMA or Arts for All, that comes in, and they have teachers that go to multiple schools and come in and do a class every other week. But it's a very different thing from it being integrated as a core academic subject, the way that math or literacy or science is a core topic. We don't think of it as a core academic topic, I think, in most schools. Mm-hmm. Even in schools where I grew up that do it better, they still put it below the math and the science and the literacy as sort of the, it's just the arts. And so I think we need to change our thinking of it. We are kind of in this world, especially like as all of our new technology is developing, where half the jobs that people do are going to get automated out. So creative thinking is probably one of the most important skills that we can give people.
Totally. Yeah, especially nowadays, you know, with the rising of AI, people are start thinking like some job designing art, you know, AI can do it. But can it? What you just talked about, like how children express themselves through drawing and art, that's very interesting, because I want to just talk a little bit about that part, because I feel like for most parents, you know, they might not see it or they might not realize it, like how important that is to kids. You know, my daughter, Anna, so she sometimes when she's having a very big emotion, you know, during that moment, I just always try to tell her, hey, just use your words, use your words. Tell me, say like how you feel.
Yeah.
But for her, it's very difficult to vocalize how she feels. So there were some times when we had a fight or we had some argument. I was busy in the kitchen and she would just like hid in the corner and throw me a piece of paper. And I picked up the paper. It was a drawing on it. And she drew her emotions on the picture with the eyes feeling sad and tears on the face. Then there's like a talking bubble mom and said, no, you know. Then I was like, oh, are you trying to tell me how you feel? And she's like, yes, I cannot say it, but I can draw it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me personally, that was a big part of why I went towards the art. I was always really quiet and didn't want to necessarily speak out and say these things, but it's such a great vehicle for expressing your ideas and your emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the moment that I realized, okay, kids drawing to express their ideas and their feelings and all that, it's actually such a important tool for them. And
I absolutely agree with you. And I'm just going to give you one example that just popped into my head of a student that I have who has a lot of anxiety. And they made an image that was like showing their, it was like their hands holding all of the weights of the world. And they described it as their piece that's demonstrating their anxiety and how they're trying to hold it together. You know, and like giving kids that space where they get to decide what they're creating and they get a vehicle for that emotional outlet can help them so much. And it really can be almost a therapeutic thing for many kids.
Totally agree. So about how we approach kids to art, I have a theory, but I want you as a professional educator to give me some feedback about my theory, because I feel like for a lot of parents, we just think if my children loves drawing and we just send her to a drawing class, or we just send them to some sort of like after school program that the teacher will teach you how to draw, the skills and all that, right? But I also feel like for some of the kids, you know, they don't like going to the class. They just enjoy drawing at home by themselves, like freely, like not being told, you know, what to draw or how we draw it, right? So I still have a lot of vivid memory about me being a kid when I was drawing. And I have so many ideas every day that I want to draw. It's just like you have those pictures showing in your mind and you just can't wait to express them on the paper. I think I started with one of my friends. She was also doing drawing. But her drawing was more copying some sort of like drawing there. So she likes to copy it. And, you know, she made her drawing look so perfect. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she's so good at this. But, you know, my drawing was just more like whatever, you know, it's like a very freestyle. It's not like looks very proper or looks so beautiful in the way the adults will view it, you know. I just started copying it too. And I want my drawing to look exactly like how that picture looks like. And then after a while, and I kind of feel like I started losing my ideas of what I want to draw. Because then if I look at the blank paper and I don't have that many ideas popping up anymore. And I just always feel like, these ideas are gone or something. So now for my own children, maybe how I approach the art education should be, I just want them to be able to freely express themselves, express their ideas first. It's not about drawing perfectly. It's not about drawing in the way that we feel like, oh yes, it looks like art. And I didn't sign them up for any art classes, mainly because my son, like, he doesn't want to be signed up. I was just always provide them the tools and the materials at home so they can just do whatever they want at home, which maybe for some parents, they feel like, oh, you are not really doing anything to support their art pursuing. But to me, I do believe that in the early year stage, I guess maybe before 10 years old or something, the focus on the art education should not be just the skills. It's more about ideas and more about your expressions. So that is just my theory. So what do you think about this?
I mean, so I think that those classes that really focus on a specific technical skill, they have their place. And I think sometimes you need that push to understand how to get those technical, but it's not teaching you the creativity. I think that it has its place. And I never discourage, like when my students talk about that they're looking for places to go, I never discourage them from taking those classes. But when I approach how to teach art and how I think it best serves the students that I work with, it's giving them that open studio time to create. Really what I do in my own classroom is I provide them with materials, I provide them with a space, and I follow this curriculum called TAB, where the entire philosophy in three sentences is the child is the artist, the art classroom is the child's studio, and we explore what artists do. We give them the space to figure out what they want to create. And that's, I think, what kids really need. If we want to teach them creativity, we need them to have space to be creative.
So is that just what you call choice-based lessons? Is that your teaching method?
Yeah, so it's choice-based lessons. It follows a philosophy called Teaching for Artistic Behaviors, or TAB. And it really focuses on the process of creating, on developing studio habits and learning how to think like an artist over a finished product. I actually think the product and what they make in my class is very secondary compared to the process of creating and learning how to think like an artist, how to improve and grow. When I watch from year after year and give them the choice, they get to pick the mediums they're interested in working in. I'll have some kids who they're really into drawing and want to get better at that, and that's all they do in my class, and I watch their skill level improve on it. And then I have other kids who are really interested in building and more architectural things, and I have someone who in the same classroom is building a fleet of ships out of cardboard. So they get that space to hone in on the skills and the areas they're interested in and really be a creative thinker and do what they're passionate about.
What would you say to those parents who would see this choice-based lesson as, well, they're not learning anything? Because back to the purpose-driven mentality, it's like, if I send you to an art class, what's the result? It's result-driven. Like, what is the result? Does it show on paper, or is actually underlying children's mental development and emotional development? Or you probably only will see it like many, many years later when they are adults, right? So how can we let more people understand this freedom of approaching art?
I mean, the same way when we send them to English class or when we send them to math class, we're not looking for the result to be, you know, the papers. We're looking for the result to be a kid who knows how to do this, who knows how to solve equations, who knows how to write. We're looking for a kid who knows how to think creatively. Who has developed the ability to observe, to develop a craft and like hone in on what their interests are and get better at it. There's a, so the model I look at is there's something called the Studio Habits of the Mind. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm describing, that was developed out of Harvard. And they talk about giving them the space to develop these studio habits to be a good thinker. That's what I'm encouraging kids to develop when they're in the art studio.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it would be just good enough if parents can actually set up a like so-called home art studio or maybe just a corner in the room for children to be able to do art freely?
I think that's in many ways one of the best thing. I think within my class, the other thing that is really offered is being in a community of artists. Okay. So I actually find kids learn just as much, sometimes more, from talking to their peers as they do from me.
I see.
We end every single class with putting their work up on our critique wall and talking about what people have made. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes even more so just talking to their peers next to them mm-hmm. while they're making it and getting ideas from each other is a mm-hmm. big factor. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, being part of that community and feeding off others' ideas to me is a really big factor.
I see. Yeah, that's very important too, because I do sometimes like do the peer review with my oil painting classmates. I didn't know that some people could actually really give me some very good feedback that I've never thought of.
Yeah.
And it really inspired me a lot.
Yeah.
So also, I'm very interested in your background because you have very extensive international experience. Mm-hmm. You've been to China, right? Yeah. So you have studied in the US and Paris, and then you lived and worked in China. From which year to which year?
I think it was 2000. Oh, goodness. I think it was 2011 to 2014. 3 years.
Okay, 3 years in China. You've taught in the Shanghai Word Foreign Language Primary School. Yep. And Songqingling Primary School. Mm-hmm. These two schools are actually quite well-known in China.
Yeah.
So how does it look like when you taught in these two schools?
So WOFL, actually, I went in as just an English teacher. I wanted to move into art, but I got hired as an English teaching role.
Oh, I see.
That's why I only stayed 1 year and switched to an art role.
Okay.
But I think the thing I got out of working there that was really interesting is they followed the PYP program, the primary years program, which is like the younger kids' version of International Baccalaureate. I actually really enjoyed getting to understand more of that philosophy. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
So what is that philosophy then?
So basically with the IB program, they focus on general questions that are threaded through their curriculum. Mm-hmm. I think there's like, if I remember this right, there's like six guiding questions that you go through with your curriculum.
I see.
And it's a lot more project-based, okay. and a lot more interactive learning,
mm-hmm.
A lot less the teacher being the sage on the stage and telling you what to do, and a lot more interactive.
I see.
And then at Songqingling is where I went into just teaching art, which is my area.
Yes.
At that time, that was a long time ago now, mm-hmm. I was still more following the discipline-based art education curriculum and gave more, everyone's going to do this type of a project at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I moved far from that since then. But even with that, I think comparatively to how things were taught in China, I still gave a lot more freedom within these projects of making choices, of expecting each kid's project to look different from the kid next to them. So Songqingling has a domestic division and an international division. Mm-hmm. And so the domestic division's art teachers very much were focused on the technical and every kid producing something quite similar. I think there's value to that. I think it helps kids hone technical skills. I don't want to like speak negatively of it.
Of course.
But it doesn't teach creative thinking.
I see.
And it's so that piece, I think, is lacking in that model.
What is your observation for those Chinese students back in the days you've had?
I think if I look at the kids who are in the international division that are doing sort of the more choice-based, more project-based learning compared to the kids who are in the domestic division that are doing much more focus on drill and kill and rote memorization and learning to pass a test, is that you get kids that are on one side in the domestic division, you get kids that are very good at taking a test and that know the correct answers, but they don't necessarily know how to problem solve. And they don't know how to sort of do the critical thinking piece and the creative thinking piece. Whereas when you take kids who are educated in the international division that have a bit more choice and a bit more focus on project based, you're getting kids who are stepping into the roles of being a leader more, who are able to solve problems, who are able to work without a direct expectation. When you're working on a project at work, mm-hmm. we aren't usually doing that with this is what the results are going to be, and we know it ahead of time. It's that you need to think creatively. So I think it fosters those skills a lot more so.
Yeah. So tell me about if there is any culture shock to you when you actually entered in a Chinese institution.
I think in general, though, more of my culture shock had to do with my time in China outside of the classroom. Within the classroom, because it was schools that really were geared toward international, I think there was less of the culture shock in the way things ran there.
I see.
The kids in general were very motivated and focused, which was wonderful. But I think the struggles like that I saw was more outside of the classroom. I was really disturbed by their hiring practices, that they really wanted to bring in an English teacher that was looked a certain way. I had a close friend who was from Pakistan that spoke English flawlessly, and they didn't want to hire her because she looked brown skinned. And so I had a hard time with that teaching there. That was one of my biggest culture shocks.
That's absolutely will be a culture shock because coming from the US, I'm like, how
the
can
DEI
you just like
pieces, I think that is really integral in the US is people don't care about that necessarily in China. And I think I was kind of coming from the US expecting everyone to treat each other equally and to have that diversity, equity, inclusion bit, and it doesn't exist.
I see.
Yeah, that was a big one. And then the special ed barely exists too, was what I was finding, at least in the school where I was. Like, there wasn't a lot of focus on, you know, either you learn in the mainstream way or you're kind of failing. They weren't really working to help kids who are special needs learners in the way that I was used to seeing it done in the US.
I see. So what about the interaction with parents back in the day?
Well, so this is a long way back, but I will say my memory of it is that their focus was probably mostly on literacy, especially with the English speaking staff.
I see.
There was probably a lot less focus and a lot less concern over their artistic development.
I see.
They really were just focused on, if they're going to talk to the English speaking staff, it was focused really on how they were doing in developing their English language skills.
I see. Well, with all that experiences, like in a different country, different culture, you know, you landed in a gifted school in Silicon Valley right now, which is so interesting because people would be curious, like, how does it look like when you teach gifted learners about art? Is there any difference or are they actually the same?
Yeah, I think the reason I actually really love it so much is what the kids come in with, just such a deeper, more thoughtful way of approaching the world. They come in with a lot more prior skills and knowledge to the point that I need to do some prep work to catch up to them. I have so many kids that know how to crochet, how to make advanced origami pieces, how to sew, how to knit, how to do things that in the typical school I'll have like one kid in the entire like out of like 200 kids that can do it. I've probably got like 30 of them that are doing it and that are more advanced than kids I teach elsewhere. So it's that they just bring in so much richness and knowledge and that they pick up new concepts so quickly. They're just really developing at a quicker rate and they're a more rich development.
So do you find it challenging to teach these kids?
Sometimes. I mean, so like I have one kid who I think has been like the number one student in California on his math test and he's into origami. I can't keep up with what he's even doing in the origami. He's telling me about the types of folds he does and he's following this tutorial that's like a 10-hour long tutorial to make this man carrying a sword out of origami. I don't think I can keep up with that.
Yeah, because those gifted kids, they tend to go deeper like with things that they are interested in, right? Because like, oh, I'm interested in this cup. Then I want to know everything about this cup, like everything.
And it's amazing. And I love that with the philosophy I have, even though, and he knows I can't quite keep up with his origami. In spite of that, what I give him is the space to dive further. And the times where we talk about and critique how it's looking so far and how he's doing with it. And so there's just that encouragement of a creative space. And it's okay if you're diving in and doing something that I don't even know how to do. I might be learning from you, even though I'm the teacher, that you are the creative thinker. Sometimes it just puts us on an equal playing field. You might know more about the subject you're diving deep into than I do. Because no one can be an expert in everything.
Yeah. This is so refreshing to hear you saying that, because as an educator, in the traditional mindset, we always tend to think, oh, you are the teacher, you should know more, and you know the right answer.
Yeah.
You know the correct answer, and I ask you, you give me the answer. Yeah. But actually, I feel like for art education, educators, or, you know, sometimes parents, we are educators too.
Yeah.
And we should put ourselves in the position that we're just supporting you, nurturing you, and giving you the freedom, right? I do remember, you know, when I'm in my oil painting class, I sometimes ask questions to my professor, and I was like, do you think I should do this way? You know, because I'm trying to just get the right answer from her.
Yeah.
But she's like, you know, there's no answer. It's just your personal style. Yeah. You know, how do you feel about this? There's no right answer in art world.
That's the beauty and the importance of the arts in general, is it's not a one right way. It's kind of humbling at times because there isn't an answer, and you're in this position where in education they talk about you're the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. Mm-hmm. You're helping guide them towards finding the answer rather than telling them what it is. And sometimes their answers amaze me, because almost every day I see kids creating things that I would never have thought to do myself, and that are fascinating, especially with this gifted population, that they're just incredible, the things they come up with.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's humbling.
Maybe as parents who grew up in a different generation or different experience, and we need to shift our mindset a little bit to the way how we can actually really nurture kids with creative thinking.
That's the beauty and the hard part of the arts, is it's really hard to measure, to find the right metric for these things.
Yes,
I think both as a parent and as a teacher, we want our kids to surpass us. We want them to do more than we even are capable of. And I want to be someone who enables and empowers the kids to do that.
Yeah. I'm so happy that I have you today, you know, for this episode, because I really wanted to create some space to advocate for art education. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important for building up the fundamental elements of humanity, especially in the world that is so fast paced. And how can we still keep up with mental health, right? Mm-hmm. And I think art is the answer.
Yeah.
We really appreciate art teachers and art educators who are helping our kids thrive. In the last, I actually would like to share with you, because my two children attend the school that you are teaching, and one day I just asked them, in your opinion, what is art? I'm curious, like, how they see art, you know, as their individual perspective, and which is very interesting. So let me play that for you to listen to it. What is art?
So art is when you get materials. It can be any materials, even garbage. You can turn it into a masterpiece, an art piece. You just get it and you can cut, you can draw on a piece of paper, and sometimes you can just use glue. Art is when somebody feels inspired by one person and another, and they want to create something, and they do. That can become art and a masterpiece.
What is your answer, Alex?
Art is the very essence of creation. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how it makes you feel. As long as you get inspired by something or you come up with something on your own, as long as you create anything that counts as art, as long as it in your perspective, if it is art. If it is not to your perspective art, then it's nothing.
That.
I know. I was mind blowing, because I was like, how, like, 5 and 8 years old can understand art in such a deep way that I would never imagine myself, you know, would understand in that way in that age, you know?
And I think they, coming out of my classroom, are expressing maybe better than I did today how my classroom runs and what the goal is for kids in there. We have it set up. There's stations. Some of them are literally like trash, like bottle caps and pieces of cardboard and like little bits of plastic. And they have stations for drawing and they have stations for painting, and they get to choose and they get to make. And it's really trying to make them feel like I'm opening up what you can create. And the key is, it's your idea, what you're envisioning, what you're crafting.
Yeah.
And so I think they express better than I do.
I know.
The joy and the beauty of the open studio.
That's amazing. And thank you for being their teacher. I'm so grateful.
毕加索曾经说过，每个孩子都是天生的艺术家，关键在于长大后如何守护这份天赋。当我以一个40岁的人的视角再次拿起画笔时，我发现我已经无法再像一个孩子般的画画了。所幸的是，我的孩子们依然有着蓬勃的创作能量。每天妹妹都会拿着画笔随心所欲地画着她心里的故事。绘画技巧是大孩子和大人们世界里的事，在孩子年幼的时候，也许我们应该做的就是保护他们那份最原始的、与生俱来的创作热情和艺术天赋，把艺术创作还给这些天生的艺术家们。与此同时，环顾四周，我觉得作为家长和教育者，更应该在拥挤的主流学术道路上给孩子留一片空间去接触艺术的这股清流，一股不被考试分数衡量，不以功利为目标，而是源自内心表达，激发想象力和创造力的力量。在这片空间里，孩子们可以自由地感受艺术带来的纯粹快乐，而不是将其视为履历上的一项技能或竞赛中的得分工具。好了，本期节目到这里就结束了。如果你喜欢我们的节目，欢迎在我们的收听平台上留下你的五星好评，或者可以给我留言，转发我们的节目给你身边更多的家长和教育者们。同时也欢迎订阅我们的 newsletter www.educationminority.com。 下期节目再见咯，拜拜。